The producers.
All right, I got some time with R-Dub. You down in San Diego right now?
I am in San Diego. I kind of lost my voice at the club last night, so I'm kind of in recovery mode this morning, but I think it's coming back.
Well, that's cool, man. I appreciate you giving me some time here on a Saturday at 10 a.m. your time, so it's actually probably pretty early for a guy who's DJing at the club, right?
You know what? It's always a cruel joke from God. You know, when you wake up on the weekdays, you know, you're absolutely exhausted, even if you got 10 hours of sleep, and sure enough, on the one day you don't have to work, Saturday, I sprung up at about 6:30 and cursed the world, but couldn't get back to sleep. So,
of course, of course. Well, we're going to talk about this new film you have called AM Mayhem. It's about Power 1490 in Tucson. Before we really dive into that, for anyone who isn't aware of you or what you do, you're programming a couple stations there in San Diego. Why don't you just give us the brief bullet points on what you do daily?
Currently, I am fortunate enough to be the program director of two of my absolute favorite radio stations in the entire universe, and that is Jammin' Z90, which is a top 40 rhythm station in San Diego Heritage, and the Jammin' Oldies or Rhythmic AC called Magic 92.5. And the ironic story is I had left local radio in 2009 after programming a station for Clear Channel in Los Angeles. Because I do a syndicated show on the side, and that was, you know, fortunately, that had taken off over the past 10 years and really offered me a lifestyle to really not have to work for local radio anymore. And as you know, the downsizing and the corporate culture, and, you know, radio is not the way it used to be. So, you know, the irony is I was done. I was living in Brazil. I was doing a syndicated show on the beach and traveling and enjoying life, and had really zero desire to get back into the local radio scene. However, the situation in San Diego with these, not only the two radio stations, but the company and people who run the stations here are absolutely fantastic. And it kind of reminds me of the 90s, the way radio used to be. We have a full staff and a budget, and morale is great. And, you know, we're not taking, mandates from, senior VPs of programming in other states. I mean, it's completely local. So I wasn't planning on getting back into radio, but here I am in San Diego, and I couldn't say enough good things, not only about the stations, but the company that owns them and the staff. It's a fantastic place, and I'll stick around here as long as they'll have me.
That's cool, man. It's great to hear, though, that, there's still some people who have really cool choices. You can live in Brazil, do your syndicated show, and live nicely, or you can choose to get back into the brick-and-mortar stations and still have a great time doing it, man. It's really cool to hear that.
The one thing about it, as far as the freedom goes, you know, years ago, you know, working at a radio station and having a great time for the most part, but, you know, there are really rough days where you're just not happy and you're thinking, man, is this it, or is this going to get any better? It's always nice to know now that if it ever does get bad, or if I'm ever unhappy, I can absolutely walk away and I can still keep the lights on. And not a lot of people have that luxury, and I'm thankful for it every day. I thank God for it every day when I wake up. It's a luxury that my parents didn't have, and not many of my friends have. So I don't take it for granted, and I try to remain as appreciative as I can, and know that we don't know the future of the radio or the stations or my syndicated show, but for now it's nice to have a cushion to fall back on in case something were to go awry at the radio station.
Yeah, let's, before I get into the movie, actually, I may as well, since I have you, just briefly, Slow Jams is the syndicated show, and I was actually cruising around your site. You've got in the neighborhood of 50 stations on board now, is that right?
We just broke, we broke the 50 mark in 2012. It was a good year for growing. We were, hovering in the 40s for the past couple of years, and in 2012, yeah, we made some strides and some efforts to really bring some new stations in. You always lose stations just through attrition with any business.
Sure.
You lose customers and you gain customers. The challenge is to gain more customers than you lose every year. And this year was a home run for us. So my goal is still 100 stations, by 2015, and we're gonna do our best to get there.
And just, I don't want to stay too long on that. I mean, it's a cool show. I've listened to your demos, and I know it's really successful. So, obviously, congrats on that. But, when did you start it? Give me some benchmarks in doing your own syndicated show like that. Because, I mean, obviously, you have passion for the music, as we'll hear about in a minute, based on the movie. But, you probably weren't making money for a period of time. Then, at what point did you finally make some money? And then at what point were you like, oh, wow, all right, this could be, you know, this is my job. You know, this is where I'm getting all my money.
You know, I never thought in a million years the show would be syndicated. I started the show really from the ground up, created the show in 1994. At Power
94,
yeah, at Power 1490, which is, you know, the station that we made the movie about, and I did.
You did that at like midnight, right? I'm sorry, you did it like midnight or something.
It originally started at midnight, yeah, and then I got this show to air Sundays from eight to midnight, and that's when we actually rebranded and called it, you know, hey, let's call it Sunday Night Slow Jams. And I'd, you know, done the show in Tucson for, you know, I think 5 or 6 or 7 years at, you know, different radio stations as I moved around and stations changed formats. And the numbers were always amazing. But I never in a million years thought the show would be syndicated. I don't have the voice that should be on a Slow Jams or a Quiet Storm show. My voice is okay. But, you know, the guys I grew up listening to in Chicago and New York and L.A., people like Kevin Slow Jam and James, they have a voice of God. I don't have that voice, and I know that, and it's okay with me. But that being said, I never in a million years thought that there was ever any syndication possibility. By chance, and this is a cool story, by chance in 2000, or it might have been 2001, but around 2000, two of my friends who were program directors at two separate stations outside of Tucson, just by chance, at the very same time, approached me and said, hey, you know, would you ever consider doing a version of the show we could play in our station? And at the time, I was building a production room and studio in my house, and it was just the perfect storm. And I thought it wouldn't go. I didn't think it would go farther at all than just those two other radio stations, Tulsa, Oklahoma, and Nogales, Arizona. And I said, I said, sure, I'll do it. And you know, for me, it was kind of like, wow, I'm nationally syndicated, even though it was, you know, only two other radio stations. And sure enough, one book later, the show was number one in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it, you know, tripled or quadrupled the ratings. And it was literally like, wow, is this real? Like, I knew the station appealed to Tucson, a very Hispanic market, but would it ever work in Oklahoma? It did. And then from there, it was literally just, I mean, there wasn't a plan. I just said, I'm just going to call a station at a time and just, you know, get this thing put on stations, no commercials, just, you know, run the show, no contract. And one station turned into 5 to 10 to 15, and the stories kept coming back. And the turning point was station number 6 for me, which was Anchorage, Alaska. The PD, Paul Boris, signs me up. He said, oh, I think this would be a cool idea. Puts the show on. We've had a 60 share ever since in Anchorage, Alaska. And I told myself, if this thing works in Alaska, it'll work anywhere. And as soon as Alaska came back and the success story came back there, I said, this thing can go anywhere. And from that day, that was when I said, all right, this has got to be on Across America. You know, and I remember the checks coming in, you know, $40, $100, $800. And, you know, even a couple $100 for doing a weekend shift, you know, because that's what I consider. I considered it a weekend shift. And by the way, all these years that I did it locally, I was never getting paid for it. I was a full-timer. I didn't even need to come in on a Sunday. I chose to come in on a Sunday because I wanted to and because I love doing the show. I wouldn't miss it for the world. So now the fact that I'm actually getting paid, what, a couple $100, you know, every month for this is just like, great, this is bonus money. And then, of course, that turned into thousands and, you know, it increased, you know, exponentially every year. And it's just, man, it's fantastic. And again, I appreciate every day. Who knows what's in store for radio with some of the big companies. And I don't know, man, but I enjoy every day. And, you know, I wish every market had the show on, regardless of size. I'm just as intrigued of being on in Farmington, New Mexico than I am of in New York City. It's not about the market size. It's about the reach. And even if I can make one person happy, sometimes being on the small markets are even better because the show's more of a big deal than a big market where, you know, might get lost. So
let me ask you before we go to the movie, Tulsa, your first affiliate, by chance, are they still carrying the show? Are they still a station that carries the show?
They are still on it. They've been on it since day one, and it's
awesome.
Great market for me. Love those guys.
Yeah, no, I love that. I love that kind of a story, too. Like a voice talent I talked to who started putting himself out there, and he's like, my first station was, you know, some little market, and he's like, and I've been on it for 23 years. And, it, you know, those are great stories. AM Mayhem, man, movie basically about the story of Power 1490 in Tucson. You already made reference to that. I guess I don't want to talk a lot about it. So tell us, you know, a brief synopsis of what the film is.
Well, it's important first to talk about the radio station itself. And, you know, without boring your listeners to death, I will just tell you that I know that every DJ thinks that their first radio station is the best and you know, amazingly special and one of a kind, and it is to them. But as an looking at the station objectively, this station was one of the most amazing stations in history. And here's the reason why. And I always lead into this for people that aren't from Tucson and don't know the history of the radio station. You have to bring yourself back to the early 90s, okay? In the 90s, AM radio was for music was already, I mean, AM radio, I think, went away in the 80s for music, especially for young music. You know, you can still you could still listen to big band or, you know, even oldies or you know, or some really niche formats, maybe Spanish radio on an AM signal. But in the 90s, top 40 radio was all FM. I mean, AM was I don't even have the word for it. It was just it was antiquated. It just wasn't used. I don't know any kids who would ever even switch to the AM band. So you have to take yourself back. And I the only thing I do is paint the picture and say, can you imagine in 1994, you know, the cool kids coming home from high school and turning on an AM radio to hear the latest from Snoop Dogg or Warren G or DJ Quick. And really, that's the basis of this of why the station was so amazing. Here was an AM radio station that was the choice for music in Tucson. That was breaking records. That brought music to a community. It was, you know, it was before you know Pandora and Spotify and MySpace. It was before the internet. There was no internet back then. So you know, besides MTV for radio, whether it's your car or your house or wherever. These kids and this entire community were tuning into an AM radio station, and that in itself was the, is the crux of the story. And to think that that station was not only existent but successful blew my mind. So the station was
amazing.
But
that's because no FM was providing what they wanted, right? And you guys realized, well, wait a minute, this is what they want, no one's providing it, and no one will provide it on FM. And you just demonstrated that if you do provide a product that people want, it's going to be popular, essentially.
100% correct. You know, without giving away too much of the movie, because I want people to see the movie, the story on Power 1490 and why it launched was actually not because of the reason you gave, which one would think that's the reason. just to go into a little bit of detail, imagine a radio station, a cluster of stations in Tucson, only two stations. One of them was AM 1490. The other one was an AC station, an adult contemporary station called Cloud. Okay, so AC station playing Phil Collins and Bette Midler and all that stuff. That was the moneymaker. That was the cash cow. That was the bread and butter of this company that made all the money. Their competition was called KRQ, and that was a top 40 station, okay? In Tucson in the early 90s, that top 40 station was starting to get in the lane of our AC station, okay, of Cloud. The top 40 station was trying to mellow it out during the day and play some of that soft rock stuff and really try to get all of the pie. They were trying to be the at-work station in the daytime and, you know, maybe the kid station at night where you would hear some of the younger music. So it was genius of the company that owned the AC station, which was, you know, kind of getting their lane invaded a little bit. They said, hey, let's take this AM signal. Let's make it a young dance slash hip hop station that will force KRQ to back away a little bit from our AC station and maybe pay attention to this little AM station and maybe, you know, quote unquote, young it up a little bit. So really, the station was created as a complete spoiler to protect the AC station in the building, therefore making KRQ say, "Man, we better play a little bit of younger, hipper music because if we don't, this AM station might start to take shares from us." That's exactly how it was created.
Let me just jump in. So of course that happens often. You know, you'll have the Clear Channel cluster and you'll have the Cumulus cluster, and they'll position, you know, brands against each other. But what at the time made you or anyone there think that positioning an AM against the big powerhouse FM would even make them think? I mean, you know, if they were to take their maybe rimshot FM signal and then position it against them, that might be fearful. But a little AM, why would anyone be afraid of a little AM? You know, kids don't listen to AM.
Yeah, I think it's because the AM station, and you're completely right, I think it's because the AM station, you know, at the time probably didn't have any numbers and really have nothing to lose. So it's probably one of those things where, you know, if it didn't make any noise, they would have probably, you know, turned it off within 6 months. You know, you also got to give give credit to the visionaries like Bruce St. James, who, you know, he was the one that came in and sold the idea to the station. So he might have oversold it. Who knows? But that's a great question.
Well, he really believed in what ultimately actually happened. So he probably, you know, he sold it. I mean, he just sold it, like you said.
And, you know, the cool thing about the movie is it takes you, you know, I wanted to dive in and take you from the beginnings to the end of that station. And that's, you know, I learned things I didn't know. For example, I didn't know how the station started. So I was able to dive in and interview people like Bruce and people like the owners and, you know, the very first GM that, you know, I had never even met before. He was gone, you know, well after I got there. But, you know, going back to why the movie was created, you know, we had this amazing radio station. It changed formats in 1995. And unfortunately, they didn't even let us say goodbye. We didn't even get to open the mic. It was a complete shock to everybody, including the staff that worked there. One day, simply, we were all called in at 4 p.m. and told the station was going to go away. And they flipped the switch at 5. We didn't get to say goodbye. And remember, this is a time before internet, before Twitter, before MySpace, before social media. So basically, from the day that we turned off until last year, for, you know, over 15 years, the entire community in Tucson had no clue why the station went away. It disappeared without a goodbye. No one even did an article about it in the Tucson Weekly. I mean, it was just gone. No one knew. It was almost like, imagine if your very first love or your first girlfriend just left one day without even a note. All of a sudden, she's gone, and none of your friends know why, and you can't get in touch with the family. It's just this mystery. So the reason why we made the film is in 2010, I arranged a reunion, a Power 1490 reunion, because I had some time on my hands. I had, you know, I'd been let go from Clear Channel after 12 years. It was 09. I was just doing my slow jam show. I was living on the beach in Brazil. I said, hey, it's now or never. Let's grab everyone. Let's do a Power 1490 reunion. No plan of a movie at all. Let's just do a reunion. Let's have everybody meet at the neighborhood bar that we all used to hang out at, called Shooters, which was, you know, right next to the radio station. So, you know, I planned this thing for like 4 or 5 months. I even put advertisements on the radio for listeners to join us for the after party at the club that night. And it was going to be a fun event. And I said, I should, you know, bring my flip cam, pass it around the table, have everyone give their favorite memory. And hey, I'll put together a 10-minute YouTube collage of that. And, you know, we'll kind of memorialize it. And then I got to thinking, this is the first time in 15 years that all these people are in a room together. It's probably going to be the last time that we're all together. Let me call my friends at the TV station who owed me a favor. They'll bring down the green screen, the lights, and the cameras. Let me document some good quality footage. And, you know, who knows? I'll put together maybe a half hour little segment. We'll do something neat. Needless to say, we do the reunion. It was a blast. I felt like I was a kid again. I mean, it was so special for everybody involved. I think it meant a lot to a lot of people. You know, we got to relive some memories, have some fun, drink a little bit. I interviewed everybody. It wasn't until weeks later where I'm looking at the footage and hearing the stories and telling myself, man, this is made for a movie or for a TV show. I mean, this is, again, I'm not giving credit to myself. The credit goes all to the people that were telling the stories. These stories are amazing. And it was that day when I was, you know, in my studio looking at the footage saying, I got to make this thing into a movie. And we did. And it wasn't just that footage. I spent a year traveling the country, and I made it a quest to find everybody that had anything to do with the station, from artists to record labels to, you know, previous owners and GMs. You know, we traveled the country, spent a ton of money, bought my own gear, learned how to shoot, you know, hook up a green screen, lighting, etc. You know, work with the record labels to get some of the music for the DVD. And really, it was a year-long project, and I was just super happy with the way it came out. So
all right, I've got like 60 questions now after that, but let me ask one or two. The artists. So you go around now and you're making this film, and you're getting to some of these labels and some of these artists that maybe at this point are kind of beyond, you know, past their prime, but at the time, you know, they're doing radio tours, they're doing massive shows, they're going around the country. How many of them, and be honest, how many of them really remembered what the station was and any importance that it had when you went to them for the film?
You know, all of them. And the reason why is because, again, it was, even in the early 90s, the rhythm format in general was groundbreaking. You know, there were only a handful of us, you know, rhythm stations around the country, and they were all very, very famous and very well known. You know, that was a time not to, you know, to just to back up a little bit, that was a time where mainstream stations wouldn't play hip hop music. They wouldn't touch hip hop music. So that's what made rhythm stations special. Just talking about the industry for a second, rhythm stations these days will never, they'll never be as special as they were in the 90s for the simple fact that they don't own their format and they don't own their music. You know, I go on, you know, radio boards and industry discussions, and there's always people, you know, talking crap about, you know, well, Power 106 isn't good as it used to be. Wild 94.9 San Francisco used to be great back in the day. Even, you know, my station, Jam and Z90 used to be so good. What happened? Well, you dummies, the format changed. And you know, we will never own hip-hop music. And hip-hop has also been around for 20, 30 years now. It's kind of lost its uniqueness and its specialness. Back in the early 90s, there were only a few rhythm stations because, you know, the big companies, you know, a lot of them were afraid to go down that route. So when you had a Kiss FM in Albuquerque or a B95 in Fresno, or a you know, a Power 1490 in Tucson, those artists back then, I think, really remembered not just Power, but all those stations. I think they extra remembered Power because, you know, A, we were the station to really bring that music to Tucson, and B, I think they probably remembered, wow, this was an AM station that is helping me sell, you know, records at Sam Goody every week. So they did remember it. You know, some of them really had some oh wow moments. For, you know, in fact, you know, mm-hmm. I was talking to ODM from A Lighter Shade of Brown, and I actually brought up a story about a certain event that happened. It took him about 5 seconds, and then he burst out in laughter, and he said, oh my God, I remember that. And then he started recounting the event, literally word for word. You know, this happened here, and there was a big line, and they grabbed my chain, and it was nuts, and the police had to shut it down. So I was actually really impressed with the way the artists, you know, remember the stations in detail.
And so this film, I mean, I love it. You know, I'm a radio nerd. I, you know, I'll have to wrap this up because, I mean, I could talk forever. But it kind of is the hook kind of the what happened? I mean, that's generally what we're waiting for with this film, is kind of the, all right, we know generally that there's this station and it was very important for these reasons. But then what happened? Is that kind of where this movie is?
You know, the main reason for this movie is to properly, give an explanation of what happened to the listeners who had no idea, and say goodbye and do a proper goodbye. You know, most movies and documentaries you see that are nonfiction, that are true, you kind of already know the outcome. For example, I watched Lincoln. I watched the movie about Abe Lincoln. We all know what happened. Lincoln got shot. We know why. We know by who. This was different because no one knew what happened to Power. I mean, no one knew what happened to Power up until now. It was a mystery. So again, you know, the main two reasons were, number one, to explain what happened, to give some insight of, hey, here's how it started, but, you know, here's why we went away. It wasn't our fault. Sorry we couldn't say goodbye. And then again, number two, to give a proper goodbye and a proper send-off and thank the listeners. And we owed that to the staff of Power 1490, who never got to say goodbye, and to the listeners. So really, for me, it was closure.
Yeah. So I guess, and again, you know, be honest, but radio nerds are gonna probably dig it. It's gonna be a cool movie to see, even if it's not, you know, Citizen Kane. But you know, non-radio people that aren't from Tucson, is it still a film that people can appreciate?
You know what, I'll be honest and say I am not sure. Here's the reason I made the film, as I just mentioned. I made it for the staff of the station. I made it for the listeners of Tucson, who may or may not have been a radio, just, you know, regular listeners who remember the station. I made it for them. Yeah. And then I also made it knowing that hopefully other industry people, other program directors and jocks around the country, like you mentioned, radio nerds, would be interested in it. I also made it way too long. I mean, I made it, it's a 2-hour movie. I would have liked to make a, you know, a 40-minute version. But again, I didn't make it for general market. I absolutely made it for the people involved in the station, the city, and radio in general. Now, the question you ask, man, I submitted it to, you know, a bunch of different film festivals, and so far I've gotten 4 acceptance. I've gotten accepted into 4 film festivals that are all around America. So
yeah, that was a leading question, and I'm really excited about that for you. I think that's a great sign.
So I guess the answer is I'm hoping that maybe some other folks found this to be an interesting story that they felt, you know, needed to be told as well. So I'm super excited about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you think about it, there's lots of movies out there that are about very specific things. And, you know, most people have nothing to do with those specific things. But, you know, a good story is a good story. So, R-Dub, man, I wish you so much luck with this. I can't wait to see it myself. I will see it. I'm not sure where or when yet. But I'm really wishing you all the best with AM Mayhem, man.
Where are you based out of? What city?
I'm in Dallas.
Okay, fantastic. I did apply for a couple of film fests in Dallas, in the area, so you'll be my first invitee, and if not, the DVD is on the way to you.
Oh, that's awesome, dude. Much appreciated. So this will be on my website, and I hope you check in with me, and you know, I'll be following it as well. But if anything big pops off with this thing, you gotta keep us posted over here on the blog.
I'll post it on my website. And by the way, if I didn't give credit to Bruce St. James, the creator and the entire staff at Power, if it wasn't for them, there'd be no story and movie. So all credit goes to them. They told the story. I just rolled tape. I hope everyone can see the movie. The website is power1490.com.
Yep, I was just going to say, yeah, Power 1490, the trailer's there. And then go to the bottom, you'll see the screenings that are already in place. You'll also see some of the awards. The festivals that you've been selected for, and then go to the very bottom and click enter power1490.com. Did you recreate a website as if it were built, not recreate, but create a website as if it was built in 1994?
You found the secret link. I made a mock website of what a website might have looked like in 94, and I tell you,
I love it.
I tell you, I made the website before the movie, so the original power1490.com was just an old radio station website. People found that site and started posting all over the radio info boards about, oh my God, this site has been left up all these years. It was the funnest hoax ever.
Like it was built in 1994.
Yep.
That's classic, man. R-Dub, thanks so much, dude, and we'll hook up again sometime soon.
Ryan, it's a pleasure, my friend.